Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
What do you hope your legacy will be?
It's not the titles you had or the, you know, the fact that you ran for this or ran for that. It's the little things in life, not just politics, how you treat people, how you want people to treat you.
War hero, powerful senator, and the last surviving presidential candidate of the greatest generation passes away. The question is, how is Bob Dole being remembered? Plus, more Americans are having to wait for COVID vaccines as demand for boosters grows. The question is, will concern over the latest variant motivated the unvaccinated to get their shots too? And after a dramatic manhunt, the parents of the accused Michigan school shooter are in custody. With the couple and their son now behind bars, the question is, could a fourth person also be charged? It's way too early for this. Good morning, and welcome to Way Too Early, the show that thinks the weekend went by entirely too quickly. I'm John Lemire on this Monday, December 6th. We'll start with the news, and we begin with the passing of an American hero. World War II veteran, longtime U.S. senator, and former Republican nominee for president, Bob Dole. NBC News senior White House correspondent Kelly O'Donnell has more.
At the U.S. Capitol, the American flag that Bob Dole long served now flies at half staff in his honor.
At every stage of my life, I've been a witness to the greatness of this country.
Senator, presidential candidate, champion for veterans and people with disabilities.
The disability community is not large, but it's important.
From a Kansas farm to fields of combat, Bob Dole carried grave wounds of World War II through decades of public service, remembered by presidents of both parties. President Biden writing, "May our nation draw upon his legacy of decency, dignity, good humor, and patriotism for all time." Donald Trump called Dole a true patriot. George W. Bush, "I will always remember Bob's salute to my late dad at the Capitol. And now we Bushes salute Bob." From Barack Obama, "His sharp wit was matched only by his integrity." And Bill Clinton, who defeated Dole for president in 1996, cited Dole's bipartisanship. "I enjoyed our combat and our cooperation even more." A Republican power broker in the Senate as majority leader, Dole was Gerald Ford's running mate in 76 and sought the presidency himself three times.
"Tonight I stand before you, tested by adversity, made sensitive by hardship, a fighter by principle, and the most optimistic man in America."
In his 90s, Dole returned to visit every county in Kansas.
"It's one time I can say to you that I don't want any of your money."
Known for his dry humor, parodied on Saturday Night Live, and played straight man to Jon Stewart.
"I've agreed to serve in case there's a tie, so you don't have to worry about it."
"I knew you'd find a way to get in there."
Father to daughter Robin from his first marriage. Married 46 years to Senator Elizabeth Dole, his partner in life, politics, and advocacy that carried on beyond elective office. Her foundation announced with heavy hearts that Dole had passed in his sleep. He was 98.
"So I leave you all tonight with a full heart and a fervent prayer that we'll meet again."
Robert Dole, a son of Kansas, impaired by war, tested by politics, lifted by his commitment to country.
We'll have more on Bob Dole's remarkable life later in the show. Turning now to the coronavirus pandemic and the growing concerns about the Omicron variant. Demand for COVID-19 vaccinations is spiking across the country as more and more Americans become eligible for booster shots. Some retail pharmacies like CVS and Walgreens are struggling to keep up with the surging demand. Vaccine seekers say they are waiting days or even weeks for appointments to get that booster shot.
According to the CDC, nearly 200 million Americans are fully vaccinated as of Saturday. That's good news. That accounts for almost 60% of the total population. Meanwhile, the president's chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, says the U.S. is reviewing its travel ban on several African nations and hopes to lift them soon. The White House announced the ban more than a week ago after the Omicron variant was discovered in South Africa. It was detected in the U.S. just a few days later.
When the ban was put on, it was put to give us time to figure out just what is going on. Now, as you mentioned, as we're getting more and more information about cases in our own country and worldwide, we're looking at that very carefully on a daily basis.
The U.S. Surgeon General also defended the controversial restrictions, calling them temporary.
These are meant to be temporary measures. Nobody wants them to be on for any longer than they need to be, and that's why we're continuously reevaluating them.
As we enter the second week of December, lawmakers still have plenty to do before the year's out. Senate leaders Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell are currently negotiating a deal to raise the all-important debt ceiling. One idea that was floated would be to tie the debt to the National Defense Bill, which typically passes with overwhelming bipartisan support. But as The Hill reports, the idea is already setting off alarm bells on both sides of the Capitol. Both House Majority Steny Hoyer and House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who agree on little these days, are warning that a defense bill that includes a debt ceiling hike would struggle to clear their chamber. The two Senate leaders, meanwhile, have been tight-lipped about their discussions, with even their closest allies acknowledging that they are largely in the dark. Spokespeople for Schumer and McConnell have refused to comment on whether the idea of combining the bills is part of their negotiations. Joining us now with more on this, NBC News Capitol Hill correspondent, my friend Ali Vitale. Ali, good morning. I hope you had a nice weekend. So tell us what we can expect. Can the Senate pass the debt ceiling with the defense bill tied to it? Is this the best option they have? We just heard there's plenty of opposition to it already.
Yeah, plenty of opposition and a little bit of consternation over this. It's an idea that has been floated because both of these things are important to do before the end of the year, though I would also note the debt ceiling is its own crisis in that it cannot be moved and it must be dealt with. There are some competing dates about when the U.S. line of credit actually runs out. The Treasury Department, though, is still sort of the date that everyone is going with on the Hill. That puts it around December 15th. We know that Congress has a tendency to not deal with these crises until right before the deadline, though they did make some good time with funding the government with like 30 hours to spare. At the same time, though, on this debt ceiling crisis, these conversations have been ongoing since before Thanksgiving, at least on the Senate side. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Minority Leader Mitch McConnell have been having conversations about how to move forward on this. The latest, though, in terms of tying the defense spending with the debt ceiling, I spoke, for example, to the head of the House Armed Services Committee right before the House left town last week, and he said no one had talked to him about it, but he had enough problems without tying those two things together. So certainly among Democrats and Republicans, some concern about whether that's actually the best plan to go forward.
There certainly doesn't seem to be much appetite, at least among most in the Senate, to have another crisis on the debt ceiling. No one wants to walk to the brink. And we've heard from Treasury Secretary Yellen and others about just the impact that would have on the nation's economy. But it's far more than just that for the Senate. You're starting a busy week, to be sure. Tell us what else is on the agenda. And in particular, the president's Build Back Better Act. As last we heard from a few days ago, it seemed like Senator Manchin and a few others were throwing some cold water on the idea that it could get done before the year was out.
Which has really always been the case here, John. The number of times that we stand outside of Senator Joe Manchin's office and continue to ask him where he is on the Build Back Better agenda, he continues to cite things like inflation. And then the last time we've spoken to him, he cited things like the Omicron variant for why he wants to make sure that this is not done too hastily. He already had concerns about government spending on programs that he feels are already insolvent or have future insolvency issues. So this slow walking or cold water throwing is not necessarily new, but of course, everything that Manchin says comes in a new light. And the new light right now, of course, is that the House has already done their work on the Build Back Better Act, sending it over to the Senate, and that's now where it sits. Schumer has set the deadline of wanting to do this before Christmas. That day ticks ever closer, and the to-do list, although it's one item less long with the government shutdown now averted until February, There's still so much on Congress's to-do list, less to do. And it's not just mentioned here either. Senator Kyrsten Sinema has also said and been coy about whether or not she outright will say yes to the Build Back Better agenda. This has long been the state of play in the Senate. We know now at least what's in the bill, but there's still some things to haggle over. For example, Senator Joe Manchin has said he doesn't want to do paid leave in reconciliation in this social spending and climate package. That's a problem because currently that is in the House bill. So there are going to be some changes on that front, we expect, as well as we're waiting for parliamentary decisions on whether or not things like immigration can be included in this. So there's part of this that's procedural, and then there's part of it that's personal politics, and both of those things remain unresolved with that Christmas deadline still looming.
NBC's Ali Vitale, I like the Christmas tree. Thank you so much. We will see you again soon. Still ahead, the parents of a Michigan school shooting suspect are facing charges, and authorities say their investigation is widening even further. Plus, amid tensions over Ukraine, President Biden is expected to hold a virtual meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Those stories and a check on the weather when we come right back.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Authorities in Michigan are expected to interview a Detroit man today in connection with last week's manhunt for the parents of suspected school shooter Ethan Crumbley. The Oakland County Sheriff's Office says it's investigating whether there was any, quote, criminality or obstruction of justice involved in the brief disappearance of Jennifer and James Crumbley. Those are the parents. The pair were found in a commercial building in Detroit early Saturday morning, hours after being charged with four counts of involuntary manslaughter. Prosecutors say the parents bought their son the gun used in last Tuesday's deadly shooting in Oxford High School and then failed to act when school staff members warned them about his disturbing behavior. They have since pleaded not guilty and are being held on $500,000 bond. Four students were killed and seven others injured in the shooting. One other teenager remains hospitalized. Officials say she, thankfully, is in stable condition. President Biden will hold a video call with Russian President Vladimir Putin tomorrow amid growing concerns that the Kremlin plans to invade Ukraine. According to the White House, Biden will address Russian military activity on Ukraine's border and, quote, reaffirm the United States' support for the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the country. Putin's expected to come to the call with his own concerns and intends to express Moscow's opposition to any move to admit Ukraine into the NATO military alliance. U.S. intelligence officials say Russia has massed around 70,000 troops near its border with Ukraine and is planning for a possible invasion as early as the first few months of next year. This will be the two leaders' first call since July when they discussed Russia-backed ransomware attacks against the United States. And, of course, they met face-to-face over the summer in Geneva. The Biden administration is seeking to salvage the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran while also preparing for a world in which there is, quote, no return to the landmark agreement. This comes after the seventh round of negotiations with Iran were suspended in Vienna on Friday. According to a senior State Department official, Tehran negotiators came to the table with proposals that walked back the compromises that Iran had floated during the first six rounds of talks, as well as compromises the U.S. had made. Moreover, beyond that, the This comes after the negotiations were suspended. The talks will resume at a later date, but it is not clear when. The State Department official noted they are less concerned with when the talks will resume and more concerned with Iran coming back, quote, when they are prepared to negotiate seriously. Still ahead, all the highlights from the Sunday's NFL Week 13 action on the gridiron, plus what we know about an expected announcement concerning a diplomatic boycott of the upcoming Winter Games in Beijing. Sports next.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
And they keep the drive alive. Bridgewater under pressure. Headed as he throws. It's intercepted by Daniel Sorensen. And Bridgewater can't knock him down. And Sorensen's going to go all the way for a touchdown.
Three turnovers, three stops on fourth down, and that 75-yard pick six by the Kansas City defense helps the Chiefs to win over the Denver Broncos on Sunday Night Football on NBC. That 22-9 victory maintains Kansas City's grip on first place in the crowded AFC West as it eyes a sixth straight division crown. They own the Broncos in recent years. In Pittsburgh, the Ravens miss a chance to take over the AFC's top seed. This is an ugly but compelling game. Trailing by a point after a touchdown with 12 seconds remaining in regulation, Baltimore decides to go for the win instead of kicking the extra point and sending the game to overtime. But the two-point attempt, you just saw it there, fails. Lamar Jackson shaky under center yesterday. Ravens, despite having the field goal kicker that could have won that game in overtime, went for it, didn't get it. That Baltimore loss leaves a logjam of 8-4 teams atop the conference. And for one day at least, your New England Patriots own the top seed. But the Pats could tumble all the way to number 5 if they fall to the Bills tonight in what should be a great Monday Night Football game in Buffalo. Meanwhile, in Chicago, the Cardinals hang on to the top spot in the NFC West. Returning fresh from a bye week, they got Kyler Murray back too, to improve to a league-leading 10-4 record with yesterday's 33-22 win over the Bears. And in Detroit, it took until the very last play of Week 13, but the Lions finally notched a win.
Here we go, 4th and 2. Get that heart rate, Mike Zimmer's.
He's not bringing pressure. I would bring pressure. I wouldn't want Goff sitting in there comfortable. There's Hockenson inside.
Here we go. Goff from the gun to the end zone. It is caught. Touchdown.
The 29-27 walk-off win over the Vikings is Detroit's first victory of the season, ending a 15-game skid that lasted 364 days since they won at Chicago last year. It's also the first one with the franchise for first-year head coach Dan Campbell, who dedicated the game ball to the Oxford, Michigan community. That's nearby. That town, of course, still grieving after last week's school shooting.
First thing I'm going to start with, this game ball goes to the whole Oxford community. All those were affected. For all those, you know, will never be forgotten, and they're in our hearts and our prayers and all the families, and not to mention all those that were affected by all of this. The classmates, the brothers and sisters, the cousins, the teachers, everybody.
Nicely done, Coach Campbell. Turning now to the college gridiron, where two SEC teams, one out of the Big Ten, and the first Group of Five team in the history of the college football playoff will play for the national title. The selection committee revealed that number 1 Alabama, number 2 Michigan, number 3 Georgia, and number 4 Cincinnati, they'll be the top 4 teams. That was announced yesterday, Selection Sunday. Alabama will face Cincinnati in the Cotton Bowl, and Michigan will face Georgia in the Orange Bowl on New Year's Eve. The winners will then play January 10th for the national championship in Indianapolis. Of course, we just saw Alabama and Georgia over the weekend. Crimson Tide crushed the previously undefeated Bulldogs. This feels like it's Nick Saban's to lose yet again. Meanwhile, a senior administration official tells NBC News that the U.S. is expected this week to announce a diplomatic boycott of the upcoming Winter Olympics in Beijing. It would mean that no U.S. government officials would attend the Games, but that American athletes would still be allowed to compete. It comes amid pressure on the president to take a stand against China's human rights abuses. China's foreign ministry warned of possible repercussions at a news conference this morning, saying, quote, if the U.S. insists willfully clinging to its course, China will take resolute countermeasures. Time now for the weather. And let's go to meteorologist Michelle Grossman. Michelle, I can certainly tell you it was rainy and miserable this morning here in New York City. What's it look like for the rest of the country?
Hi there, Jonathan. We have so much going on this morning. We have severe weather, we have snow, we have wind, we have blustery conditions, and then we have really warm conditions in New York City this morning. So let's first start with what's happening right now. We have a line of storms stretching from the Ohio Valley down to the south central states, and we're going to see this kind of trekking to the east as we go throughout the day. That's going to bring the threat for more severe weather in parts of the south central states. So anywhere from Jackson over to Shreveport into eastern Texas, we have the chance to see winds gusting near 60 miles per hour, low risk for hail and damaging winds, but we could see that. And also isolated tornado is possible in those spots. So we're going to be watching that throughout the day. Now, as you head to the north, we're looking at very windy conditions, winds gusting to 60 miles per hour. So on the cold side of the system, we're looking at blustery conditions. We're looking at temperatures that could be below zero in many spots. It's going to feel like 22 below zero in Fargo. It's going to feel like 10 below zero in Minneapolis. And that's going to continue really into Wednesday. So as you wake up on Tuesday morning, we're looking at temperatures feeling like 20 below zero in Duluth. So, Jonathan, it's a big week. We're looking at the possibility of some snow in the Northeast on Wednesday. So we'll talk about that as we look at the days ahead.
It does feel like winter has finally arrived for much of the country. 20 below. No, yeah, thanks. Okay. Michelle Grossman, thank you, though. And still ahead, former Senator Bob Dole has died at the age of 98. Susan Page, who spoke to the war hero and former presidential nominee earlier this year, will join us in a moment with a look back at his lasting legacy. But before we go to break, we want to know, why are you awake? Email your reasons to waytooearly at MSNBC.com or tweet me at John Lemire. Be sure to use the hashtag waytooearly. We'll read some of our favorite answers later in the show. Welcome back to Way Too Early. It's just before 5:30 on the East Coast, 2:30 at West. I'm Jonathan Lemire. We've been covering the passing of former Republican presidential nominee Bob Dole. So much of his legacy is shaped by his time as a soldier. While in politics, and especially afterwards, Dole always fought for those who served. NBC News Chief Washington Correspondent Andrea Mitchell takes a look back.
At the World War II Memorial in Washington on many a weekend, an old soldier reporting for duty.
And thank you for your service.
Former Second Lieutenant Bob Dole in the final years of a lifetime of public service, having led the fundraising campaign to build a memorial honoring all those who served in a war that forever changed his life.
Whether you're in the Army, Navy, Marine, you know, Merchant Marines. If I'm in town, I'll be here. And during the week, sometimes they come on Wednesday, Thursday. But Saturday is generally the big day.
The young Dole was a star high school football player in his small hometown of Russell, Kansas, planning to become a surgeon. Called to active duty in 1943, he was 21 years old with the 10th Mountain Division in Italy on April 14, 1945, when the Germans began firing on his platoon.
The morning I was wounded, my radio man had been wounded, and I crawled out trying to get him back in the little ravine. And I got shot, and he didn't make it. He passed away. So I tried, but I couldn't save him.
Flying metal hit Dole's right shoulder and arm, breaking several bones in his neck and spine. It was just 2 weeks before the end of the war in Europe. Back home, he underwent 7 operations over 3 years, lost a kidney and the use of his right arm. No longer able to pursue his dream of becoming a surgeon, he turned to law and politics, although he couldn't shake hands and always clutched a pen in his fist so people wouldn't try. His wartime service also gave special focus to much of his work in Congress, shaping tax policy, farm programs, and anti-discrimination laws and other measures to make America more accessible to the disabled. Summing up his storied career for Tom Brokaw this way.
My proudest title is veteran of all the other titles I've had.
Our thanks to Andrew Mitchell for that report. And joining us now, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, Susan Page. Her latest article is titled, A Belief in Hard Work, An Aversion to Big Talk, and Kansas Roots. He never lost. Bob Dole's abiding legacy. Susan, you've covered Bob Dole for decades, first in 1980 and speaking to him for the final time just days before his 98th birthday. In your assessment, what will be the legacy of Bob Dole's time in Washington?
Yeah, I've been interviewing Bob Dole for 40 years, and he was the same character when I interviewed him the first time in 1980 as he was 2 days before his birthday this July. You know, his legacy is one of a kind of political service and that seems a little lost now. I mean, he was definitely a Republican, a partisan Republican, stood up for Richard Nixon to the final days of his presidency, voted for Donald Trump twice. But he was also someone who worked across party lines on things like Social Security and the Americans with Disabilities Act, and most of all, on programs to help veterans like himself who had seen their lives changed by war and by their service.
Yeah, and he's such an advocate for veterans and the disabled. Susan, you write about how Bob Dole saw the evolution of the GOP, and I'm going to read a little bit of it now. In his final years, he was at odds with the direction of the Republican Party he had loved and led. Some are so far right, they're going to fall out of the Capitol, he said of Tea Party supporters in an interview with me, meaning you, in 2014. And I don't know what they contribute if they're against everything. If you're going to be a national party, there are some things you should be against, but there's got to be some things you're for. The last time I saw him was this July, 2 days before his 98th birthday. He had no apologies for supporting Donald Trump for president in 2016 and 2020. I'm a Trumper, he said. But he also said he was sort of Trumped out. And he said there was no question that Trump had lost his reelection bid fair and square. So, Susan, let's dive a little bit further on that. Bob Dole's relationship with former President Trump, he called himself a Trumper, but grew tired of the 45th president. How did he see the future of the Republican Party? Did he want the GOP to turn the page from Trump?
Yes, I think so. I think he thought, it's not that he agreed with Trump on a lot of policies, and he was, of course, the only Republican presidential nominee to show up at that convention in 2016 that nominated Donald Trump. But I think he worries very much, not just about the direction of the Republican Party, about the direction of the country. And he told me when I saw him in July, he said he was really interested in this young guy, Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia, had gotten so many headlines and was doing so much in the Senate that he told me he thought maybe he'd call Joe Manchin and see if he would come over to see him. And I'm not sure whether that ever worked out.
Well, certainly Bob Dole was respectful and understood power in the Senate. And he knows that Senator Manchin is certainly wielding it now. Susan, lastly, you and the former senator are both from Kansas. Give us a sense as to the values from that state that he brought with him in a life of public service.
Well, fiscal conservatives, conservative politically, with a certain suspicion of big talkers from the East and West Coast. Rhetorical excellence is not something that is really a characteristic, I think, of many people from Kansas. We tend to be a little suspicious of people who are too glib. But also, I think one thing that marked Bob Dole's service was he understood that there were times when people needed a hand up, that life could be unfair as life had been unfair to him during his service in World War II, and that there was a legitimate role for government in trying to help people when they found themselves in hard times.
He also, it seemed, always kept his sense of humor about him, despite a real life of some hardship. And I know that over the weekend, yesterday after his passing, certainly a number of his more memorable speeches, amusing jokes were making the rounds on Twitter. I certainly encourage people to check that out. Bob Dole, a life well lived indeed. And USA Today, Susan Page, we really appreciate you being here today with your memories of him. Still ahead, after Friday's disappointing jobs number sent stocks tumbling, we'll go live to CNBC for an early look at what's driving the new week on Wall Street. Way Too Early is coming right back. Time now for business. For that, let's bring in CNBC's Juliana Tattelbaum live from London and fresh off her weekend binging movies on Netflix featuring The Rock. Juliana, great to see you. Stocks on Wall Street fell on Friday after a pretty mixed November jobs report. All three major indexes ending in the red last week. We certainly know the jobs report in the U.S. did not meet expectations, well less than projections, but the unemployment rate fell. We heard from President Biden saying, actually, no, this is a step in the right direction. We know there have been revisions up to previous reports. So give us your sense of what we heard on Friday, and what can investors expect from the global markets this week?
Well, stock markets on Friday ended the week on a downbeat note, but it was an incredibly volatile week of trade, huge swings in both directions. Now, all eyes were on that non-farm payrolls report on Friday. The headline number disappointed economists' expectations, as you just highlighted. But if you look below for the detail, there were some encouraging components, the unemployment rate and the labor force participation rate. So it wasn't interpreted as all bad. This morning, U.S. futures indicate a mixed start to the trading session. We had been looking at a pretty strong start to the trading session early on this morning, but the positive momentum has faded somewhat, and now we're looking at a more mixed start. Similar trade here in Europe this morning. All investors on both sides of the Atlantic are keeping their focus firmly on the Omicron variant headlines, with some initial lines over the weekend pointing to hopefully some encouraging developments. It is too early to say conclusively, but in particular, investors taking some respite in some initial data out of South Africa suggesting that the variant may cause less severe disease than earlier strains. Again, too early to say, but that does seem to be providing a bit of a floor to sentiment in global markets.
Yeah, I think you and I saw those same reports. And to underscore, it's too early to know for sure, but there is a growing hope that though this variant is very transmissible, but maybe less severe. And in some ways, that would be a good thing to bring, if that becomes a dominant strain, bringing about a little bit of moderation to where we stand on the pandemic. We'll see. But we know certainly the supply chain is still an issue, and the backlogs are having an impact on pharmacies. And now there are reports that drugstores are running out of important prescription medication. What is the FDA doing about these shortages?
So the FDA has noted that there are around 111 drugs on back order right now, including heart medications, antibiotics, and cancer drugs. The agency on its website says that they are working to address these issues. It's asked manufacturers to evaluate their whole supply chain. So from the active pharmaceutical ingredients to the end form to all the components that are used to develop drugs. Worth noting that about 80% of active pharmaceutical ingredients, so the component of drugs that actually has an effect on your body, are manufactured outside of the United States, so highly dependent on the global supply chain. And as we've discussed many times before, and as I know you've been discussing on your show, there are major issues around global supply chains, in particular congestion at ports. The Biden administration is working to alleviate that congestion. At the moment, the message from the FDA is for patients not to panic, to call their pharmacist to seek alternatives and plan for potential shortages. But the message, don't panic, certainly right now. And Jonathan, I'm disappointed to say that I didn't manage to catch that film on Netflix, Red Notice, maybe this week.
Yeah, well, I think we both have a homework assignment. I admit I skipped it too. Someday we'll get there. CNBC's Juliana Tattelbaum, live from London. We appreciate it as always. We'll see you soon. Thank you. And still ahead, the latest stop in the White House campaign to promote the president's signature legislative accomplishment. Way Too Early is coming right back with those details. The White House has announced that President Biden will travel to Kansas City on Wednesday to tout the bipartisan infrastructure law. It's the latest stop in the administration's campaign to promote his signature legislative achievement. Biden has visited several other states, including New Hampshire, Michigan, and Minnesota, in an effort to tout the package, but Missouri will be his first visit to a state that voted for former President Trump in the 2020 election. And it begins a period of an aggressive schedule for this White House trying to promote these bills and give Democrats a lift heading into next year's midterms. My colleagues and I at Politico have a new story out this morning that talked to a number of Democratic lawmakers who are worried about the president's poll numbers and how they could be, right now, hovering in the low 40s, dragged down the party during next year's midterm elections. We know that an unpopular president can often indeed be an anchor on his party's efforts to keep control of Congress. Certainly historical trends show that the party out of power usually does pretty well. But the Democrats we talked to, concerned, not panicked, not just yet. They feel like they have nearly a year to promote their agenda. But they say what's key get the Build Back Better Act passed and passed soon. Once they have that, they can run on it. And if they can show Americans the tangible benefits of that legislation, combined with, hopefully, a decline in coronavirus cases, decline in inflation, they feel like they have still a shot this fall to at least hold on to one House of Congress. We, of course, will be following this closely. Joining us now, another Politico, my colleague, Eugene Daniels, who's a White House correspondent and author of The Playbook. He is, I'm also happy to say, an MSNBC contributor. Eugene, great to see you. How is President Biden's infrastructure package, if you've got polling there, being received by the public so far? And what should we expect to hear from him in his visit to Kansas City, a rare foray to a red state later this week?
Exactly. Well, this is a very important trip for them because they wanted to make sure from the very beginning that folks understood that this bipartisan infrastructure bill was not just for Democrats, right? They want to make sure that it's also Republicans. So this is a way for them to do that, to show, hey, we're not scared of going to states where we didn't win. Maybe we're not, maybe I'm even less popular for President Biden, and to make sure people know that all of these things that we're doing are for everyone. And I think that's something really important because they've been frustrated both in the White House and Democrats on Capitol Hill and around the country that the legislative achievement, this one that they really should be able to sell really easily, that they should eventually get a lot of credit for, is overshadowed by the kind of messiness of actually getting through the social spending bill that they're still working through. That's overshadowed the infrastructure bill. So this is an opportunity for them to do that, for them to actually say, hey, we did this. And one of the issues that they might run into is that when they did the child tax credit, they didn't get a lot of credit for that from the American people. And that's something we found in our polling. Just 39% of folks gave that credit for the child tax credit to President Biden, even though that was something that he was pushing for. So they have a lot of work to do, and they know it, and they say they're willing to do it.
Yeah, certainly a theme heard from so many Democrats in recent weeks is regret over the self-inflicted wounds about how messy the process has been to get this stuff done. But we're not sure it's going to get any easier, particularly with Senator Manchin throwing up some roadblocks, trying to get this. So as other Democrats try to get the social spending bill done by year's end. Switching gears, the president is expected tomorrow to hold a video conference meeting with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, over rising tensions with Ukraine. We're going to have a lot more on this tomorrow as well. But Eugene, start us off here. Tell us what White House is signaling as to what the president's goals will be tomorrow. And what has Putin said in response about Washington warning against taking military action against Ukraine?
The White House has been very clear that they want when the president meets with him tomorrow, he's going to be telling Putin to basically to support how much we support Ukraine as a country. I'm assuming there'll be some talk about kind of knock it off, the kind of actions that are being taken. Because this is a White House that from the very, very beginning said it wanted a stable relationship with Putin. And we know and they knew that that's not really how Putin operates. And so this is a lot of what's going on in around Ukraine and Russia right now are more tests from the Russian president on a very young presidency, not president. And so the White House is basically trying to see what are the ways they can head off an invasion through diplomacy, talking to our allies, talking to Russia. Back channel now, this call with the Russian president by President Biden, because there's panicking in Ukraine. Our allies, they are worried politically. Volodymyr Zelensky is already a little bit weakened in that country. And so that's what we're seeing is this president, ours, is going to have to push even further with Russia to say we support Ukraine and how far they're willing to go as the United States military.
Yeah, certainly a high stakes virtual meeting and one that I think the White House wishes it didn't have to have. They had hoped that they had, after that summit in Geneva in June with Vladimir Putin, they had kind of put Russia away and wanted to pivot towards Asia and Beijing in particular. And that has not happened just yet. Politico's Eugene Daniels, we really appreciate it, pal. We'll see you again soon. Earlier in the show, we asked this question. Why are you awake? Brendan emailed this. I'm up early to start tailgating at the Bills Monday night game in Buffalo. So, Brendan, of course, the Bills are playing the Patriots, who have had, shall we say, a fair degree of success against the Bills in, I don't know, the last couple of decades. We'll see how tonight goes, but it's a good thing you're starting early. Barbara, Dan, you've got what Barbara's got back there. Tell us.
Yeah, I've got Barbara here. She was up with her prediction that Eugene Daniels would be looking as sharp as usual. Fact check, true.
No need to deny that at all. Eugene looked great this morning. He looked great on Meet the Press yesterday. He always looks great. He has a signature look. The turtleneck, the jacket, terrific. I'm a B-plus today. Tony tweets this. I'm awake way too early because I'm a proud USPS carrier in New Hampshire, expecting to work a 12-hour day to make sure everyone's holiday gifts arrive safely. Well, we certainly appreciate that effort. There's been a lot of warnings about buy your packages early, get your presents out the door fast, make sure they get there for Christmas. Let's hope we can all get there and that Santa doesn't disappoint anyone.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.